Halflings, it has finally happened. We have merch!
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The crowd does indeed go wild. We have been working very hard behind the scenes to make some excellent merch for you all, which is available to pre-order right now. Some of them will be available from the 3rd of October and the others from the 1st of November. We wanted to do this in time for the holidays so that if you know someone who maybe enjoys a bit of Three Black Halflings, you can get them a Christmas present or indeed for yourself. It's also a fantastic way to support the show. You basically have like a Unati pack, by the way, a Unati stickers pack.
It's true.
Pretty awesome. Unati stickers pack. I like this.
It's called the Suffer and Learn sticker pack, but originally it was called the Unati sticker pack.
Okay, good. I'm happy with the Suffer and Learn.
We liked it because it's like, then it's quotes.
Instead of just pictures of Unati's face.
Several different expressions.
Yeah. It's weird because this is not a video show. You know what it is? It's visualizations of the audio track. Oh, like Unati's audio tracks from some of her finest episodes.
Yeah. It's just the blocked out lines where she's peaked her microphone from laughing.
Exactly.
So the merch that we have available, we have a yellow collage hoodie, which has a mixture of designs and phrases from the show. The Three Black Halflings t-shirt, which has got an amazing design and the words Three Black Halflings. It looks so nice. I'm very happy with that one. Then we have the Outlaws and Obelisks poster. You can order a physical poster. A beautiful, gorgeous poster of Outlaws and Obelisks. Then we have a pin and then two whole sticker packs.
I have a question.
Yes.
Does this pin definitively answer the question of the official abbreviation for Three Black Halflings?
I think it does.
Because
yeah, I think it maybe it does. Yeah.
We've been saying TBH. Should we swatch? Should we start selling swatches?
Should we start selling swatches?
We have to tell about the deal with swatch. The Three Black Halflings Swatch Watch.
But, you know, this is one of those things that has evolved over time. We're forming our brand identity, and I think 3BH is just a little bit better.
We have officially become a corporation.
We are a huge corporation with Jamal at the top.
Jamal is pleased.
First critical role, then us.
There is also a tip jar on the store. If you would like to, you can give us a tip, and some of the proceeds will go to the amazing Jonathan Charles, who made the music for Outlaws and Obelisks. As when you donate to the tip jar at any level, you will be able to download the music that Jonathan has made for Outlaws and Obelisks, and it is absolutely incredible. Like, you will want to listen to this
good.
Without us all talking over the top of it, because it's so so good.
I listen to it for fun.
Yes.
Like, it's, when I'm on planes and stuff, I'll just play the songs over and over again on a
because loop. They're so good.
This is a true fact. Because they're real good.
They're really good.
Excellent tunage.
And some of the stickers I'm very, very proud of. I really think they look so badass, and I can't wait to slap them all over my office.
I love the Poochie Rat Bag sticker that is extremely late 90s.
Yes, it really is.
It is extremely late 90s.
Make sure you head over to store.dftba.com/collections/3blackhalflings. And if you would like to get yourself a discount, you can get 10% off if you are a patron on any tier. That is patreon.com/TBHalflings.
Woohoo!
Head over to all of our social medias. It will be plastered all over our social medias for a long, long, long time, I'm sure. But please support the show, buy some merch. It means a lot to us. And it would be really, really, really fucking cool to see some people, take some pictures. It's some Three Black Halflings merch. I'm so goddamn excited. Well, let's get into this week's episode!
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jeremy Cobb, and I am joined today by...
Luyanda Unati Lewis Nyao, but everybody calls me Unati!
And of course, Dark Fringe calls me the Scream Beast.
Ooh, why?
In reference to Jeremy, spelt J apostrophe E R apostrophe E M apostrophe I H. pronounced like Jeremy from Dimension 20's side quest, Escape from the Blood Keep.
Uh-huh, I see. Yes. Okay, cool.
The character that Matt Mercer referred to on air as his favorite animal companion of all time.
Ah, awesome.
Before realizing what show he was on and then immediately amending his statement to be, oh, I mean Trinket. Yeah, I'm just going to give a hot take here. This is not an indictment on anyone's performances. I hate Trinket.
Aww.
The bear sucks.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
We're about to get into something real big now.
And here's why I think Trinket is a problem. He's a bear.
Okay.
And this is D&D. Okay. And they started that campaign, at least on terms of being on the air, at level 9.
Ah.
He's a bear.
Okay.
And it's level 9.
Okay.
He's dead weight. And there's no question he is throughout the campaign. There are multiple times where they have to like, oh, we're trying to fly. Can somebody make Trinket fly? we're going to go do this thing. Can somebody make sure Trinket can Trinket fit on the magic carpet? And like Matt had like homebrewed this cool necklace thing that when Trinket inevitably died in any combat, he would pop up inside of this pocket dimension that existed inside of the necklace.
Mm-hmm.
So he would die and then just be teleported to the necklace. And after a certain point, they could pop him back out again.
Okay.
But it was just like this.
A lot of work.
The bear's useless. He's useless.
Yeah.
Trinket's cute and stuff, but like, come on. He should have tragically died a long time before, and just been one of those things like, remember Trinket?
Remember?
I feel like that's how that should have gone.
Oh no, bless.
Anyway, this literally, there's not even a segue. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Absolutely
today.
Nothing. This
is, I guess, considering it's October,
this is
a spooky Halloween themed Three Black Halflings episode. Correct me if I'm wrong, Unati. Jasper is not a big horror movie guy. Is that correct?
I don't think so. I think every time he has spoken about horror movies, he's kind of shuddered in fear. So I'm going to take that as a big horror movie guy. And every time he describes like being freaked out by things, like it always involves him like jumping and abandoning his like girlfriend.
When we were in the very first episode of The Cub and the Caterpillar, when it turned out you guys were standing on a giant snake and he leapt off of the couch running out. Because this one was an actual like live stream, like a visual live stream.
Yeah.
And he jumped off of the couch and ran out of frame.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's a pretty strong indicator that he doesn't really like the many scary things.
Yeah, so while he's gone, this is a perfect time for us to do, because you and I both very much enjoy horror movies.
I like a horror movie. I mean, they absolutely exacerbate my stress levels and freak me the fuck out, but I'll watch them.
I didn't get into horror movies until my late teens, like 19, and then like into my 20s. I think that's when I actually started to get into horror movies. And I love them. Love them.
I enjoyed them. I think my parents were kind of fast and loose with the R ratings and stuff on like movies. So like I watched a lot of stuff before I should have. I saw like The Shining and a whole bunch of things long before I was ready for The Shining.
What age range are we talking?
I think the sort of like first memory I have of watching a horror film, I was about like 9, 10.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So by contrast, my parents were typically very careful about what they let me watch, which is partly why I got into horror movies much later than I think most people do. But later than most people do. But the one movie that I did see that I was probably too young to have seen was The Terminator, which I saw at the age of 8. Because my dad forgot just how violent and brutal it was.
Yeah. I think sometimes things slip through the cracks. I have a friend whose parents never let him watch like horror movies and stuff, but somehow because it was sci-fi, let him watch Aliens when he was like 10. And I was like, they didn't know what it was. They were like, oh, this is just sci-fi. I'm like, no, ma'am. No. Yeah.
This is, I mean, it is, that is one of the genres that it fits under.
Yes.
That is true. That is technically true. Yes. The Terminator, by the way, I do also consider kind of a horror action.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can liken the Terminator to Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers. Like, he just keeps coming.
Yeah, he's a sci-fi version of those. Yeah. Not on my list, but maybe it should be. Anyway, we are going to talk about our top 5 horror movies. It took us a while to get there, but we're talking about them. Unati and I are going to talk about our top 5 horror movies. We're going to talk about why they're our favorite horror movies. And not just, and look, before you turn off, because you're like, oh, I hate horror movies, I don't want to hear anything scary. We're also going to talk about how horror as a genre can be used to represent things that you might not otherwise have been able to depict in quite this way.
Exactly.
The subtext can be incredibly strong and very, very effective in a horror movie. I have a couple of examples that aren't even on my list that I'm going to throw out there. Here's the thing. This is why it's useful considering we are a TTRPG podcast. Yes. This is something that you can bring into your games. Not that I'm saying you have to have a full-blown, horrifying, horror-like, themed campaign, but for those of you who are listening to Outlaws and Obelisks, I would say Outlaws and Obelisks ventured pretty deep into horror in episode 4. Yeah. Anyway, I've been talking for a long time. Unati, why don't you give us the first movie on your top 5 horror movie list?
The first movie on my top 5 horror movie list, and I think it's pretty fitting after you chatting about how it can be representational, is It Follows.
That would have been one of the ones I would have brought up.
Yeah. I really, really, really enjoyed that film. I thought it was well written, very well shot. And I thought it was evocative of, it kind of did what it did. It's at face value, you know, it's about a sort of monster that passes on from person to person when they hook up. And
so it's sexually transmitted.
Yeah. It's like a sexual, it's basically like an STD. And I think that it deals with shame, fear, and stigma around sexually transmitted diseases really well because of that.
The deal with the monster is that it will, once you have become its target, it will never stop walking in the shortest possible route, theoretically, to get to you. And the thing is, you don't know what the monster looks like because it will transform and assume various guises. Depending on, and it's also invisible to everyone else. So if you are not the monster's target, it is completely invisible to you. And if you are its target, you can't necessarily tell who or what it is because it can assume a variety of shapes. So sometimes it'll assume shapes of just random innocuous people for stealth purposes. Other times it'll deliberately pick faces that you recognize or deliberately scary things just to, seemingly a monster just wants to freak you out. And then once it gets up to you, it kills you. Just like beats you to death very brutally. We never actually see it. I don't think we see it kill anybody.
Yeah.
But we see the aftermath of someone having been killed by it towards the beginning. And it is something.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
It was very violent. Yeah. So even with the score, it's very much a throwback to 80s style slasher movies.
Yeah.
And it plays on the same horror movie subtext of like virginity being some form of purity, and there's shame and death associated with sex. I don't know if is Scream on your list.
No, Scream isn't on my list. I mean, I enjoyed that film.
Then I'll mention Scream as an example, because I don't have it on my list either. But Scream is a really great horror movie from the 90s that is very meta and it's not really a deconstruction. It's a little bit kind of, anyway, Scream is basically a movie that's about horror movies.
Yeah.
It's specifically slasher movies. And they're talking about like the rules. There are certain rules for successfully surviving a horror movie. And they are like listing like number one is that you can never, ever have sex. Yeah. If as soon as you have sex, you are marked for death.
Yep. Virgins, people who have sex, the virgins who lose their virginity always die first.
Yeah. Sexual subtext is strong with horror movies, with the horror genre. That's going to come up a few times on my list, certainly. But yeah, it follows a great example I think it's pretty present. Like, it's not, you don't have to dig real deep to get the text in that movie.
Yeah.
But yeah. And even beyond the text, it's just like, it's a scary movie. There's some very good parts to that movie.
Yeah. There aren't a lot of like, it's quite subtle and understated in how it kind of creeps up on you. Like, if you're looking for loads of jump scares, probably not the one for you. But all in all, still a very good film.
Yeah. In fact, I don't think any of the movies on my list have good jump scares, unfortunately. Although I will say my favorite jump scare of all time is in The Exorcist 3. If you've seen The Exorcist 3, you'll know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't seen The Exorcist 3, my suggestion is go watch The Exorcist 3. But if you really want to see the jump scare, you can just go on YouTube. But it's just not going to be as effective. But anyway, The Exorcist 3 is not on my list. I just wanted to throw that out there because it's a great movie. The first movie that I'm going to mention on my list, I believe, came out in 1968, stars Mia Farrow in probably her most famous role at this point. She was a big star for years, but I think this is her most enduring movie. It's Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, yeah.
This movie, in and of itself, is like, there's not really much in the way of violence, not much in the way of blood in this movie, but it propagates a really paranoid and just really eerie and uncomfortable atmosphere.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen it.
No, I haven't seen Rosemary's Baby.
Okay, yeah. The premise,
I think I've seen the Zoe Saldana, like...
Did they do a remake starring Zoe Saldana?
Yeah, they did.
Oh wait, they did a mini series.
Yeah, it was a mini series. Yeah, I think I've seen that. So like, I know the story of Rosemary's Baby. I wasn't born under a rock, but like, I haven't seen the film.
Rosemary's Baby is basically a young woman named Rosemary and her husband Guy move into a new apartment. These elderly people are living next door. They have and over the course of the movie, it becomes clear that Rosemary falls pregnant after a very disturbing and unsettling sequence in which it's implied that Satan has shown up and has impregnated her. And over the course of the movie, it becomes clear there's something real wrong with this kid.
Yeah.
And not only that, but everyone around Rosemary is just not listening to her.
Yep.
And in and of the movie itself is very good, I think. Like, it's a pretty, a classic for a reason.
Yeah.
But I think what really makes it interesting on a subtextual level, at least for me, I read it as a movie about patriarchy. It's about like the horrors of existing inside of a patriarchal system that you weren't aware of. Rosemary throughout the movie is going to people being like, yo, I'm getting these really strong pains inside, and like, I have like a craving for like raw meat, I think it was something that happened. All these weird things. She's like, I don't feel good about this. What's going on?
This is a bit strange.
and everybody's just like, that's fine.
You're just being too sensitive. You'll be okay. This weird concoction. Isn't there a point like somebody makes her like a bizarre concoction? She needs to take
over and
like...
over. Yeah, the lady who lives next door makes her this terrible tasting concoction, and not only that, like her husband. Basically, the result of the movie is that there's a huge conspiracy going on. And it involves almost everyone in the film. In fact, the only people, the only person who actually listens to Rosemary is her best friend, who is coded as gay. Yeah. And I think it's very interesting that you have this woman who's experiencing a really traumatic, pregnancy process. And the only person who will listen to her is a person from another marginalized community. Everyone else is just like, whatever. And even like some women are in on it. It's mainly men who are leading this. And at one point, even her doctor, it turns out, is in on it. And like the famous line that that I have always taken away from it is her friend like leaves her a note, and one it just says like, all of them witches, indicating that like everybody that is around her is in on this. Yeah. I think it deals very interestingly with the horrors of being trapped in a system that is designed to control you and just use you.
Yeah.
Because she's being used, it turns out she's being used for her ability to carry children. It's a very, very fascinating and, really great movie. I like it a lot. In the subtext of it, I could go into more details, but you end up with spoilers. So, but if you go and watch Rosemary's Baby, it has, just remember to keep that in mind. Idea of patriarchy. Her husband's name is Guy. For goodness sake, it's
just
Guy.
Guy.
literally, he's just Guy. Yeah. But yeah, go check that movie out. Anyway, that's my first movie.
Excellent.
Yes.
My second movie is, because sometimes I just like a little gore for the sake of it. It's going to be a Sam Raimi kind of coming in there with Drag Me to Hell, man.
Ooh.
Like, I really enjoyed the film. Look, I love, like, Evil Dead, like, should have also kind of made it on here. But, like, I really enjoy
Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2 are both gorier than I recall Drag Me to Hell being.
Yeah, but I quite liked Drag Me to Hell because it really... I mean, Evil Dead also takes the piss out of itself, but I just really enjoyed the dancing goat. I'm sorry. That just really brought me so much joy.
Sam Raimi is really... I feel like the younger people may not realize how good of a director Sam Raimi is.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to horror.
Yeah,
there's a really good Nerdwriter video about the tentacle attack scene in Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
And how it basically is like a short film, like a short horror film in the middle of this Spider-Man movie, and how well it's done.
Yeah, it's great. Like, he is, if you're looking for something that is going to be scary, and there'll be the odd jump scare in there, but mostly it's just a really good time if you enjoy a bit of blood and gore. I think a Sam Raimi film is going to be right up your alley. Basically this one, this loan officer evicts this old woman, and in kind of like classic old woman kind of Baba Yaga, like the old crone kind of storyline, this woman essentially curses this young girl for evicting her from her home. And these demons try to drag her down to hell, and it's basically about her trying to figure out how to get this curse lifted off of her. And it's, you know, it does what it says on the tin. It's a good movie.
I don't know if you've done much reading about that movie, because I remember back when it came out, there was a lot of discussion about the movie having a subtext of eating disorders.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the crone's hand, like, goes into her mouth. She, like, stuffs it into her face.
Yeah, and doesn't it, like, come out of her mouth at one point? Or somebody...
And she climbs out of it. Yeah. Like, I'm also, looking into it now.
There's no actual evidence that Sam Raimi deliberately tried to make it this way, but like there's some people do interpret it that way.
Okay, cool. I'm gonna watch it again with this view.
Yeah, it makes me want to watch it again too. That movie it really is a blast.
The movie, and then awesome. The old lady like vomits a bunch of maggots into her face.
Yeah.
What's yours?
Yeah, my next movie is less of a horror movie and more of a thriller, but there's, I would say, there's horror aspects. It is, I believe, 1953. 3, The Night of the Hunter.
Ooh.
Night of the Hunter starring Robert Mitchum.
Okay, cool.
Oh, 1955. Starring Robert Mitchum, directed by Charles Laughton. Charles Laughton, a very well-regarded British actor at the time. This is the only film Charles Laughton ever directed, and it was not a financial success at the time, but it has since become a classic. Most of you have probably never heard of it. You've probably not seen it, but you have probably seen things that are referencing it. This is the movie that originated the love and hate tattoos on the knuckles. The premise of this movie is also based on the book. The book's pretty good too. I've read the book, but it is about a man, a preacher who travels around murdering people, specifically women, it seems. And he comes into contact with a family. The protagonist of the movie is the son of that family. The father at this family had committed a crime and... I think he'd stolen money. He'd stolen a bunch of money, and he was arrested for it, but he hid the money and told his son Jack where it was, and Jack has a little sister named Pearl. Jack's like maybe 10 or 11, and Pearl's like a solid 5.
Okay.
Even 4. So Pearl's small. And he told Jack where he hid the money, and he was taken off to jail. Eventually, he was executed. He was hanged. And he happened to be cellmates with this evil preacher who had been picked up for, I think, unrelated reasons. And then the preacher, of course, finds out that this dude had money hidden somewhere. And so goes to track down his family and of course, ingratiates himself to them and into the community. And then things go downhill from there. But this movie is absolutely incredible. Robert Mitchum's performance is fantastic. It has it's unlike pretty much any other movie you will see in that there's a real fable-like feeling to it. It's very much, it feels like a child's scary story.
Okay.
And even some of the scenes that are depictions of, it gets real expressionist at certain points. The shadows, there's a, for example, when the preacher first shows up at the house, you see it's at night and the kids are in bed in their room, and Jack hears somebody. He hears a voice outside singing. You can always tell the preacher's coming because he sings.
Okay.
As he's looking out there, a silhouette appears in the window and consumes them both of the guy's head and his hat, just like, whoof, and it's like, the visual style is so arresting. There's an incredible underwater sequence that's at once horrifying and beautiful. It's a really, really good movie. Even just Googling Night of the Hunter and looking at Google images, you'll see some absolutely fantastic imagery. But it feels like it's from the perspective of a child. There are parts of it that I think deliberately play kind of silly because of that. But that famous, I think one of the lines that's most famous from it is just the preacher looking down into the basement and calling out to the kids and going, "Children, children," and it's just it's this deep baritone voice just through into. It's so creepy. That movie's fantastic. There, as far as subtext goes, there's a lot of subtext of religious, not just religious, but a lot of safety and fear. There's interesting songs that are sung at various points. The little girl sings a song about a pretty fly. It's clearly a metaphor for what has happened to her. And then there's these kids are looking for a place to rest and a place to be safe. And there's an amazing scene where the preacher, the song he always sings, he pops up. And a person inside the house who's trying to defend the children starts duetting with him. So he's posted up outside of the house, silhouetted this horrifying figure outside, and she's singing along with him. And it's whoa,
that's
this is
really
great.
Cool.
That movie's awesome. I could talk for a really long time about Night of the Hunter. That movie, okay. I could talk for a long time about any of these movies, honestly. But yeah, Night of the Hunter is a great movie. Go check it out, especially if you don't mind an old black and white movie.
Yeah, I will check that out. That's gone on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. My one is not a classic. And in fact, it's probably just really terrible, but I really love it because I loved it since I was a kid. And that is Halloween H2O.
Ooh.
Like, of all the Halloweens, H2O.
Oh, wow.
I really love it. I just like, because I really like the franchise and like the women in the story do sometimes like, you know, essentially just try and survive Mike Myers, right? Mm-hmm. Basically. But like, this is the first time, like, especially as a young girl watching horror movies and receiving a lot of that messaging that like, usually you just die at the hands of like way stronger men. It was one of the first times where I just remember Jamie Lee Curtis kicking in that safety glass and pulling out the axe and just screaming, Michael, down the hallways. Like, you know what? I'm choosing violence today. Fuck you. Like, like, I'm done with you. I cannot deal with you anymore. I don't give a crap if you're my sibling. You've wrecked my life. I can't do this. I'm ending it.
Awesome.
And I really just enjoyed that moment. Of course, like, you know, across like sci-fi and some other things have been, you know, sort of, it was during that period where like we'd had Ripley, we were getting a couple of people, we were getting Gina Davis and Long Kiss Goodnight with Samuel L. Jackson, and then Jamie Lee Curtis and H2O came out, and it was just like, oh, this is really satisfying. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for just like hacking at this man with an axe and trying to not just take him down, because everybody else just runs to him from him, and he's just slow walking up at you, and eventually will track you down and stab you to death.
Yep.
But it was just really satisfying to just see somebody go, you know what? Enough. I'm gonna hack you up. And I really just love that movie for that moment. Honestly. it's just that moment I filled with so much joy even just remembering it. Like, that's all
awesome.
It is to me.
That sounds pretty sick.
It's not a great film. It really isn't otherwise. Like,
is the consensus there's really only one great Halloween movie?
Yeah.
Like,
the general
consensus. I know there's probably hardcore fans of the franchise out there that may have other ones.
Yeah.
But is the consensus that the first one is really the only one that you should watch if you're a horror fan?
Yeah. I think it's the first one is the one that you should watch if you're like a massive horror fan. But like, I watched all of them, like, through, just because they all kind of came out.
Have you seen the most recent remake and stuff?
No, I haven't seen that. Like, I think I stopped at about Halloween H2O, or the one just after.
Halloween Resurrection?
Yeah. Essentially, when VHS stopped being a thing, and I stopped getting my movies at the video store, that's when I stopped watching the Halloween things. Because, like, you walk into a video store and, like, there's all those little placards of what's new, and you're like, oh, we'll grab a comedy, a drama, and a horror film for Nazi. So, like, I would, like, consume loads. So I really just enjoyed that one for that. And it's fun. It's not super scary. Like, if you don't like horror movies in general because they super, super freak you out, like, this is, like, a fun, like, oh, I want to get in on the Halloween vibe, but I'm not going to be totally like freaked out by this for days, and it's not going to mess with my anxiety.
So it's not a pure horror as much.
I mean, it is. It's scary, but like, there's nothing about it that's really going to sit with you for very long unless you have serious anxiety issues. Like, there's nothing about it It is what it is. There's no messaging. Like, it's very surface. Like, there's nothing lingeringly scary about it. It's just a slasher fic. It's just a slasher. That's it.
Okay. I've only seen the first Halloween, and I really like that movie. That movie's great.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that there is value to be gained from the other movies in the franchise, of which there are many.
That was like, there are so many. Like, at some point, you're like, please stop. Like, please. Like, there's what else is there?
I have the list right now. I'm just going to go through them real quick. Halloween, it's 1978. One of the first slasher movies, codified a lot of the slasher genre.
Yeah.
Halloween 2, 1981. Yeah. Halloween 3, Season of the Witch,
Yeah.
Okay, 1982. Mm-hmm. They're getting closer. Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers. They then waited 6 years. That one was 1988.
Yeah.
Then Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers. So yep, he returned, yep. But now he'll have his revenge.
Revenge, yeah.
That mm-hmm. came out in 89. Then Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's 1995. So he returned. He had his revenge.
Revenge.
And then he left his curse. And then we have Halloween, H20, 20 years later. Then Halloween Resurrection. Halloween... Yeah. 2007. It's a remake by Rob Zombie. Then Halloween 2, which is, I think, a sequel to that, that is also done by Rob Zombie.
Yeah, those are fun. They're actually kind of fun.
And then we have Halloween 2018, which is they brought Jamie Lee Curtis back.
Yeah.
This is like, it's returning it to the original series. But then I didn't realize this. They did one that came out this year.
Yeah, yeah. There is another one that came out.
Called Halloween Kills.
Yeah. There's a lot. And that's kind of why the moment where you think Mike Myers is dead after, like, she takes his head off with a bus. No, with an ambulance. And then he still comes back. I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, there's like, clearly something, supernatural.
Yeah, but, like, it's never explained. no one ever goes into it.
That's the deal. You never know what's up with Michael Myers.
Like, it's just Mike Myers. He wears the mask. He's a bit weird.
It's the actor Mike Myers. Mike Myers showing up. That's why he's so unstoppable. His career will never die.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, I just like that movie because it's a little bit of fun. And it's also like, it feels like a high school film as well. I mean, it's quite a few horror films are set in that way, but this one really feels like that because her kid is going off to Yosemite. It's Josh Hartnett. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in it as, well. So like a little bit of eye candy.
But little baby Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Wasn't he
like a teenager?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I was also a teenager when I was watching it.
Yes, very appropriate eye candy if you are also a teenager.
For me, we were in the same.
Yeah, he wasn't even 20 when that movie came out. I think he wasn't even 18 when the movie was released. So
he's a little older than me. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're a teenager who's into Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah.
If
you're currently like in your early 30s, it's okay to sort of simp on him because you were also that age at that time.
Are you a Joseph Gordon-Levitt simp? Go watch Halloween 20.
Is it? No. I take that back. That's not okay. It's still not okay. I firmly take that back. Like, this
Unati's a hardcore Joseph Gordon-Levitt simp.
No, I firmly retract that statement. It is not okay if you are a woman in your 30s who never saw the film in the first place when he was 18.
To go perv on... He wasn't even 18.
To go and perv...
I'd like to clarify. The movie came out in 80 or 98, and he was born in 81.
He wasn't even
18 when it was released.
Like, unless you watched it and you're doing a rewatch.
And then you're reminiscing.
And you're reminiscing
you're
about how you
passed. Yeah, your youthful
self. How
you
felt in the youthful times. It's okay. If you're just a grown ass woman now looking at teenagers, I do not support that.
What if you had a crush on Joseph Gordon-Levitt as a teenager and you were like of that age, but you hadn't seen this movie?
And I still think of that as reminiscing.
Yeah,
because you'd be like,
you're reminiscing on this old school crush that you had. Especially if you personally knew Joseph Gordon-Levitt and both of you were teenagers and you had a crush on him then went unaddressed.
This is now on its own spiral.
I find all of this really But yeah, anyway, moving on. I'm gonna throw in something from a D&D game really quickly. It's not a horror movie, but I'm gonna just throw in an example. I'm gonna try and pepper them in. An example of horror. There was a one shot that I ran back in I think I ran it in 2020. Early 2020 or 2019, like late 2019, there was at the end, it was this whole crazy dream thing that the party was going through. And at the end, they fought characters who were like representational of their greatest failings as a party. And so, yes. So our boy Ryan, there was, I think I can't remember if I've told the story of Timba on air yet.
I don't know.
So I have to give a little bit of background. There was like a session where they had encountered a bunch of a herd of aurochs. I think I've told this, where the aurochs are basically a prehistoric cow. Modern cattle. Many modern cattle are actually derived from aurochs, not oryx, aurochs. And they're just big, aggressive cows. And they like, there was a herd of these, and Ryan was playing a Minotaur, so he's like, dude, there's these huge cow things that have shown up. I'm going to befriend one of them. So he befriended one. He rolled so well to, like, to win this cow to his side.
Yeah.
And he named her Timba. And immediately the next day after having gotten her, tried to ride her, only to discover that Timba is a wild animal that you just kind of befriended and then took from her herd. She is not riding material yet. You need to train her for that. Most things don't like it when things climb on top of their back and try to just sit there. So she did not respond well to that. It was a whole struggle. And then eventually the party was wanted by the government and they were trying to sneak through this huge field, and there were scouts all over the place looking for them. And Timba rolled too low on her stealth check, and some of the scouts spotted her. And Ryan's character, Jal, upon realizing that Timba had been spotted but none of the rest of the party had, he'd been leading her through the grass.
Remember the story.
Yeah, and he just drops the leash that was, like, leading her. And she's, like, gives, like, a confused moo, and he just keeps walking, and she lets out another moo, like, hey. Because he's, you know, this is her friend. And he, without even looking, throws some rations over his shoulder. He literally says, I throw her a ration.
Ryan.
And Timba died. Let's put it that way. Timba was killed by some opportunistic scouts who were like, hey, we can have steaks. Because they were halflings as well. So they were like, this is so much beef.
Yeah,
this will be great for us and our families. So they
killed
Timba.
Man. Ryan.
And... we love you, Ryan.
We love you so much.
So in this session, a revenant Timba appeared to try and kill Jal, and she almost did. She got him unconscious with two failed death saves at least once, possibly twice. Like, he was on the verge of death twice. Timba was on a mission, man. And that was one of the things. Another one, a character, her brother had his brain eaten by an intellect devourer, and it had controlled him, and he'd run it back into the plane that he originally came from. And so she saw, like, a representation of her brother, like, in chains, with some kind of, like, metal muzzle over his mouth. And he was like, it was like a straitjacket of chains that he couldn't move. And he couldn't speak. It was like he could see what was happening, but he couldn't do anything to affect it. And then the power, it was, all of this was like reskinned stuff, but the metal, like, muzzle would, like, clink open and force his jaw open, far past the point where it should have been opened. And it would just, as it's, like, opening, and then he'd let out this horrible blood-curdling scream that would force people to make, like, wisdom saves and stuff like that. And that was kind of a representation of, like, you failed, like, you basically helped get your brother's brain eaten, and now he is a threat to everyone around him, even though he himself can't do anything. And the way that we depicted people having their brain eaten was very, it was basically the sunken place from Get Out. So you're just, like, floating there, like, no! But all you can do is watch.
Oh, no, that's horrible.
Yeah, it's also similar to, like, the Yerks from Animorphs, if anybody's read that, where you're still inside and you can feel and hear and see and taste everything, but you can't do anything about it. You're just stuck there, and there's something else controlling you. It's real, real bad. Anyway, that was a little bit of horror that I had dropped into a past campaign. My next movie is, I believe, 1983, 1984. This is another. We've been talking about Halloween. Oh, this is 1982. Dang. Mm. We've been talking about Halloween. I want to talk about the first Halloween movie was originally directed by John Carpenter, and he also wrote the famous theme song. He played the whole score. I think he wrote it as well. I'm going to talk about another John Carpenter movie.
Woohoo!
John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh, that's good.
Yes, the premise of The Thing is like a sci-fi horror film that takes place in Antarctica. There's a bunch of men at this base in Antarctica, a research base, and there's like a Norwegian base where something has clearly gone wrong, and this dog shows up being chased by guys in a helicopter who are shooting at the dog. The dog, it's a husky. The dog like runs up to them. These dudes are like pointing the guns, screaming at them in Norwegian. No one can understand what they're saying. They end up shooting the Norwegian guys. They die. Turns out there's something really wrong with this dog. The idea is that there's a monster that is able to basically take you over and then replace all of your cells with its cells and just pretend to be you. And given enough time, it can create like a perfect copy of you. But it will go around and try and assimilate everyone. First of all, the premise of a bunch of guys being trapped in a base, because you're in Antarctica, now like they're getting a blizzard coming through. They're stuck here with a thing that they can't identify, and it's hunting them, and it could be anyone. We don't know who it is. Because it's also smart. So it will try and do things to throw people off its trail and possibly even frame other people. And so you don't know who is the thing, who is currently infected by the thing. This 1982 movie about a bunch of guys fearing an infection that they can't identify but can be found in the blood. I think it's pretty obvious what the subtext is here. This is, I don't know if this was intentional, but it is very easy to read this as a metaphor for the AIDS epidemic, which was raging at the time, especially since at this point not a whole lot was known about AIDS. There was still a lot of mystery, but it seemed to primarily be affecting gay men and drug addicts. And in this case, you have... It's all men. All of them are men. And it's a disease that is... It could be anyone at any time. You have to keep away from everyone else.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
If you have contact with other people, you could get it. And there's like there's a famous scene where they're testing everyone's blood to try and see who is the thing at that point, or who has the thing. Yeah, it's an amazing movie. Stars Kurt Russell, Keith David is in it. I think Wilford Brimley is in it. I love Wilford Brimley. Have I talked about Wilford Brimley on this show before?
I don't think you have.
So Wilford Brimley, he is, Americans of a certain age will know him specifically for his diabetes medication commercials. He was a big activist to help people with their diabetes, like type 2 diabetes specifically. He was a pretty rotund fellow. He was kind of old. He looked like a walrus because he had this big old mustache. And he's the famous word that he would say is diabetes. He would always talk about how he has type 2 diabetes. And it's just the way that he'd say diabetes.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I'm trying to deal with when I need help managing my type 2 diabetes, I turn to such and such and such and such. And yeah. Anyway, he seems like a genuinely nice dude, but Wilford Brimley is in this movie. And there's actually an amazing video. Folks, go watch this. Go Google diabetes cat. There's like somebody took a cat who looks just like Wilford Brimley. And the cat like turns to the camera and I presumably went like, but they edited in. So when the cat looks and does that, you hear diabetes. And it's to this day one of my favorite internet videos of all time. It makes me laugh every time. Because it's this really fat, fluffy cat. Diabetes.
That's
I'm gonna make you watch the video after this because I love that video. I'm gonna watch it. Anyway, Wilford Brimley's in it. It's just an amazing film. The thing. There's a lot of body horror. Lot of body horror. John Carpenter also did the theme for The Thing, the music for The Thing. Great movie. Also, you could read it as like a metaphor for communism. Like, can't tell who the communist is.
This is. Awesome.
Anyway, awesome. That's my third movie.
Yeah. I'm on four now, yeah? Yeah.
Yeah.
My number four is not strictly a movie. It is a TV series. I know, right? And it's Them, which came out on Amazon Prime this year.
Ooh.
And it's fairly polarizing because basically you have to know where your grim dark level is. Like, and
would you describe it as grim dark or just grim and dark?
Grim and dark.
Okay, because grim dark is like edgelordy.
Yeah, no. This isn't edgelordy. I'm going for more grim and dark. And also just because it's a TV series and because each episode is 1 hour long and it's focusing on a family's experience of racial trauma, the creator is looking at how it affects everybody. So how does racism affect black men and how does it affect white black women? How does it affect young black adolescents in school down to like how does racism infiltrate the education system to the point where it's affecting young black children at a really young age. And then how do those things then intersect in the home? Basically, how does that force interactions between family members who are going through that level of stress at all times? So that's kind of represented by like the paranormal force that's in the home. But obviously, on the outside, there is still actual just racism. Just plain fucking racism. Mm-hmm. Like, really racism. Clear. Yeah. Sparkling racism is alive and kicking in the streets. So, you know,
we out here in these streets.
Do you know what I mean? Racist. And it has a really interesting effect because because, you know, what's coded in a paranormal space and what's actual kind of literal, right? Starts to look the same, right? Like it all becomes this horrible monster. It all equates to this terrifying monster that becomes racism. And the effect for me was that racism, I mean, you know, I keep having to explain this every time I explain this to people, but you know, racism is real, but let's say this, like, it made racism really real. Like, and when, like, I finished watching it, yeah, and like incarnate, I was like running up the stairs afraid of the dark because I was afraid of the racism. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, and I was like, oh,
there's racism hiding under the stairs.
Yeah, like it's done that, like, because it's in the house, right? It bleeds into their home. Like, it's in there as well as a paranormal thing. So, like, it was really effective in doing that. It is polarizing because it can feel like persecution porn for some. And that's why I say, where is your grim and dark level? Because I live in like Attack on Titan land, and I can just take that level of like, just give me all the traumas, right? Whereas some people are like, ooh, is this going too far? And I think by its very nature of being a TV show with, I think, 8 or 9 episodes, all about an hour's length, like all intense and high octane, it's gonna feel like a lot. And also in a culture where you can binge something like that, like, you so don't have to wait
8 hours of horror, like, and pain.
8 hours. And it you know, and what the producers of the show did is that they then with each episode also released the cast and directors like talk back, because a lot of it is like some of the stuff that they do is like pushing like a line, like and deliberately, I think, in an interesting way. It's skirting a line and it's fascinating. It's always like just on the edge of like, oof, like how maybe far is far. This go- yeah like how far is this gonna go? Because I think that we are largely desensitized a little bit. And not necessarily about racism, because obviously, like, there's been a massive kind of resurgence, you know, due to George Floyd, and people are like, you know, now trying to look into this and do the work. I'm like, thank you, welcome to the club. Sorry, that was like the most glib I've ever been. Like, thank you, well done, you're an ally, thank you very much. Keep doing the work. But like, I think there is a space in which work can be made to remind you just how kind of difficult it is. Because when my white counterparts go, I don't really understand how it feels, I now have something to be like, you see this? Just watch this.
Just spend 8 hours watching this incredibly traumatizing series.
8 hours watching this, and then afterwards, like, have like a nice meal, maybe a nap, and then watch how they see us back to back, and then maybe you'll get like a little sensation of what it feels like that level of cortisol running through your system all the time, just like baseline stress. Yeah, that's always kind of there. So yeah, I really thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was beautifully done. I thought it explored each element of racism in an interesting way.
So this is a not for the faint of heart. None of these are for the faint of heart, but this one sounds like it's really
it's rough. Because it is a depiction of trauma, like it is. In my opinion, I don't think it's a pointless one or senseless one. I think it's really articulate in what it's trying to do and really effective. And I think its use of, what do you call them, Jeremy? You've used them before. American tall tales.
Oh yeah. Tall tales. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think its usage of American tall tales is excellent.
Like John Hammer and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like, I think, and how it subverts them and uses them to explore these really intense themes. Yeah, like the young adolescence, sort of teenage experience, the young girl, that was like back-to-back my experience when I was at a private school in South Africa when I was at King's College. That's what it felt like. That is literally my experience of being in like predominantly white spaces. Like I was like, I'd never watched somebody actually articulate it like that. I was like, yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. I thought it was brilliant. And it's rough. I ain't gonna lie. It's rough. Like space it out. It's hella rough.
Yeah, it sounds really, really interesting. I may have to check that series out because I remember hearing about it. I remember hearing, now that you're talking about it, the polarizing opinions, because there's a Facebook group that I'm in, and the people in that Facebook group were real down on it. So I think it's nice to hear how it was a very effective show for you, while it may not have been as effective for them.
And also let me just like mark this. I am not Black American.
That's also true.
That I think that has to be said for part of my experience of it. Yes, I understand. Like obviously, I resonate because I'm also Black. Like, but I don't necessarily have that direct American experience of that. Mm-hmm. I come from South Africa, so I do have an understanding of segregation and what that feels like.
You come from the other racist place.
We come from the other, like, hella racist place. So I can really understand and empathize. But I will say that I guess currently, because Hollywood has been greenlighting a lot of these sort of Black-coded horror pieces of horror, like Jordan Peele's work.
Get Out changed a lot, folks.
Yeah, Lovecraft Country. Like a lot of the stuff is kind of coming out. This kind of genre-bending stuff. So I think maybe there is a level of exhaustion that I can appreciate and understand. But as a piece of work, it does stand for me and for my taste. Like I'm like, yeah, bring on the traumas. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's tear off the Band-Aid. Let's just go for it. But that's not for everyone.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm just like heavy warning there. Like,
yeah, I think you've made a great case for it, and also. Yeah. Anyone who has listened to you talk is not going to go into this being like, this is going to be a light romp.
Oh no, it's really, really not. But like the female lead, I'm sorry, she nails it. Like she just nails it. She's amazing. Like the cast, everything. It's shot beautifully. It's amazing. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Definitely gonna have to check that show out. Sounds awesome. Thank you, Unati.
Pleasure.
The next one on my list is actually sort of I cheated as well. This is two movies. This is Alien and Aliens.
Yeah. That should be both, on the list.
Both very different, but both fantastic in their own ways. Alien, I won't go into too much detail. I guess we're going to have to put a content warning at the beginning of this episode just for light discussions of eating disorders. And also, this is a trigger warning, because the subtext of the first... Well, I'll give you the premise first. I'll give you the premise of the movies. Actually, no, I'll just give you the trigger warning now. Trigger warning, there's a discussion of sexual assault coming. Yeah. Not detailed, but it's referenced. The Alien is about a group of, I think, cargo haulers. Essentially, they're just like your working class blue collar folks just hauling cargo. I forget exactly what they're doing, but it's just a basic job on this freighter ship, I believe, called the Nostromo. Yeah. And they get a signal from a planet that I forget even why they go to the planet. The name of the planet is LV-426. I remember that very, very vividly.
Very vividly, but why they're going there.
Yeah, LV-426. They're going there to check something out. I'm going to read it right now. They are, let's see. They're a space tug, so they're a tug ship. I guess they tow people. And they received a transmission from a nearby moon, and they're supposed to go investigate the distress signal according to company policy. They go down to this planet, this moon, and they discover that there's all this alien construction there. It's like they've stumbled upon some kind of old alien complex. Everyone seems to be either gone or dead. They only see, I think, one alien there that appears to have been have died somehow. It's got like a hole in its chest. They eventually come upon all these eggs, and what's in these eggs turns out to be very bad. Very, very, yes. Very bad.
Yeah.
That's the that's the premise of the first Alien. The premise of the second Alien, I mean, is it's a follow-up to the first one. I don't need to tell you the premise. It's alien stuff. There's a bunch of aliens this time. But the first Alien is directed by Ridley Scott, 1979. Incredible movie. It's clearly influenced by stuff like 2001 A Space Odyssey, but also stuff like Halloween. The idea of being hunted by something through this ship. It also Jaws, the idea of like not really seeing the alien clearly for the majority of the film, which they did partly because the alien suit looked bad. So like it was a great design, but it looked like a guy in a suit. So they tried to show as little of it as possible. But the effects, fantastic. The subtext of the movie, very much about sexual assault. And that's not a theory. The creators of the film have gone on record as saying they deliberately did that.
The
whole life cycle of the alien, clearly based around sexual assault. The way that the alien's head looks, how phallic its head is, the fact that when it opens its mouth, another little phallic mouth pops out. The way that Veronica Cartwright's character dies, very sexually coded. The chest bursting scene, it's basically like an erection plop popping out of this dude's chest. There are even everything with Ash. There's Ash the android who has, I think his quarters have a bunch of like porn mags, magazines like taped up, and then he tries to kill the protagonist Ripley with one of these magazines by rolling it up and shoving it down her throat. She knocks his head off, and a bunch of white goo comes out. Like it is through and through the. Yeah. The ship's main computer is called Mother and looks very womb-like in the way that it's designed. It's just... And then finally, you have Ripley, this lone woman alone with this alien monster. She ends up winning, spoiler alert, because there's a sequel. But Sigourney Weaver, this is the role that made her a star. It's a great movie. I would argue, again, a feminist movie. Except in regards to in contrast to Rosemary's Baby, which is more of a feminist tragedy, Alien is she wins in the end, and she doesn't win because of her purity. She wins because she's awesome and she survives. Like she wins because she's smart and tough. And does not get brought down by this thing. And that brings us, speaking of being smart and tough, to Aliens, which is very much pivoting really from a lot of the sexual assault stuff into, I would argue, a deconstruction of toxic masculinity and machismo. James Cameron directed the sequel Aliens. Both of these, like, what a pedigree. Your first movie is directed by Ridley Scott, and then you go to James Cameron. Like, what a pedigree here. The sequel, I think, came out in like either 86 or 88. The sequel's post-Terminator, the first Terminator. But the Aliens is, it's amazing. There's a bunch of space marines now investigating a facility also with Ripley. And Ripley's, like, constantly trying to warn them, but all these, like, super macho marines. Even the woman who's part of this unit is so macho. She's over-the-top macho. All of these people are so macho. And they're like, James Cameron has said that it's supposed to be a reference to Vietnam and how the U.S. Army went in being like, we can totally win. And then next thing they know, it's just, and it really does not go very well. Yeah. They were completely unprepared for the situation they were walking into. That's what happens here. These folks did not realize just how bad it was gonna get. And what's very interesting is all of the macho people die. The worst person in the movie, though, like the biggest villain in the movie, or I guess biggest secondary villain in the movie, is this spiny Spineless, Weasley, kind of like nice guy type who's mm-hmm. like trying to be like, oh yeah, go, I'm everybody's friend and I'm the money guy and blah, blah, blah. But he's also clearly treacherous and can't be trusted. The android in this movie is actually very polite and does not try to do anything untoward to anybody. And he survives barely. And then the one Marine who survives is the nice non-macho Marine, the guy who's respectful and considerate of Ripley and actually comes closer to listening to her than anyone else. So all of the toxically masculine people die, and the only male figures who survive the movie, except for the I can't remember if the Weasley guy dies. I think he does, but the only like positive male, the only male figures who survive the movie are both like positive, non-misogynist dudes. And then the final battle is between Ripley and the alien queen. Over like the alien queen is angry because her children have been destroyed, and now she's attacking Ripley's surrogate daughter. And Ripley shows up, and those two throw down in a truly iconic scene. It's Aliens is more of an action movie, but still very strong horror DNA. Alien is pretty much a pure horror movie, pure horror sci-fi, and then Aliens is horror sci-fi action.
Okay, cool, awesome.
I made the mistake of watching Aliens and Predator as a double feature at the Prince Charles Cinema. Predator really comes off as being really stupid after seeing Aliens, because Predator it presents the exact same types of guys, mostly uncritically. It's just like who the manliest survives in Predator. Yeah. For me, the best parts of Predator are the Predator itself. I think that I think the idea of like this invisible thing that's following you, even though there's like some weird racial coding there with the dreadlocks and the way it's like, oh, he's in the jungle and all this stuff. I like the idea of like this being that just hunts people and the sounds that it makes and everything are really great. But also the over the top stuff. That's the other best part. The comedy essentially of being like, it'll make you a goddamn sexual tyrannosaurus like me. That's an amazing line. But anyway, Aliens, great movie. I'm done talking about it. I could talk about Alien and Aliens much longer, but I will stop there.
No, for sure, for sure. That was really good. Thank you. Thank you. I might need to rewatch those again. My number one is pretty easy as Get Out. Like I really enjoyed that film. I think it's really well balanced overall. And I mean, you can't miss
a little bit of a comedy horror, comedy horror thriller,
little bit of a comedy horror thrill, which I kind of enjoy. Like, and also, you know, you get what it's about kind of immediately. And I find that its subtlety is really quite chilling. Some excellent, excellent performances, really help to sell it. And again, just taking something really quite personal and quite politically coded and wrapping it in a lot of beautiful Hitchcockian elements and finding that visual language and internal metaphor for something that is essentially happening all around you more often than you think. Okay, not the weird like stealing people's, But the weird stealing people's bodies things and using people's bodies for cattle and you know financial gain and that kind of thing, like that's really happening. So I really enjoy it. I think it's a really good film, and it's a good one to start your resident sort of like still kind of got one foot in bigotry friend on. It's like a This is kind of nice.
It's also a good movie if you get freaked out really easily, because I would argue it's if you really dig into it, it's kind of horrifying. It's pretty horrifying, but in terms of like what actually happens, not as scary as a lot of the other movies that we're talking about. Not that violent either, for the most part. In terms of like gore or anything like that.
It's like you said, it's horrifying, but it's not scary.
It's a lot of suspense.
I
would say.
Yeah.
And there are some scary parts for sure.
There are some elements, but like it's not gonna cause you to not be able to sleep.
Aliens, the thing. Yeah.
You won't lose any sleep.
Yeah. And I'm gonna throw that out actually, Night of the Hunter as well. Really more of a thriller. Not a horror movie. As such. But yeah, the Get Out's an amazing movie.
It's an incredible film. It's an absolute triumph, and it's kind of just in terms of like what it's done for the industry and other stories of that ilk, it's changed the game up.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. I'm really glad. I'm really happy about that. That makes me very happy. Yeah. Especially as a big Key and Peele fan.
Yeah. Makes me really happy too. I enjoy it. What's yours? What's your number one?
These aren't really in any order. I've just been the fifth movie I'm saying.
Yeah.
I say my fifth movie, there's some honorable mentions that didn't make the list. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
The first one specifically. There's a lot of subtext to do with slaughterhouses. But even beyond that, shockingly not that violent of a film.
Yeah.
If you actually watch it, in terms of on-screen violence, really not that violent. You see, there are violent acts committed, but not, in my opinion, all that graphically. But still, it's very effective. And the last 20 minutes is one of the most disturbing sequences I have seen in any horror movie. I love that sequence. I have like a cycling computer background thing, and one of them is that dinner table with all of the family just like leering. That sequence, I have like stories of the making of that movie because it was like a no budget movie, and they were shooting it in Texas I think the summer in like this house with horrible ventilation. There was a point at which the actor playing Leatherface forgot that he wasn't actually Leatherface and attempted to murder the actress. Like he thought he actually was Leatherface and tried to attack her for real. There's a part where this was just in the making of it. There was a point at which they're supposed to cut open the character's finger, like not like huge. It's not like a huge cut. It's like they cut her fingertip, and they had a fake finger to do this with. But because of how hot it was, the blood injector thing wasn't squirting anything out. So they just took the actress's actual finger and shot the scene just cutting open her fingertip of her actual finger, which I think was consensual. I really hope it was.
I really hope so.
It was the early, I think it was 73, so it wouldn't surprise me if they did pull some BS there. But anyway, I don't think the actress holds any lasting, like, I've never heard of her coming out being like, this movie ruined my life. Like, it's a great movie. The Exorcist, I think 1973. A lot of stuff about belief versus non-belief, puberty, young woman's burgeoning sexuality and all that stuff, good versus evil. Groundbreaking. I would say at this point more shocking than scary. There is stuff in this movie that to this day you don't see in movies. The crucifix scene, you couldn't put that in a movie now.
Yeah, you just can't put that in a movie.
And that movie, when it came out, became the highest grossing movie of all time. That movie goes hard.
It goes really hard. Really does not pull any punches.
Yeah. Hereditary.
Yeah.
From just a few years
ago. That was also on my honorable mentions. Yeah. I was toying with that.
A lot of family dynamics. Yeah. What people pass on to their descendants and how the descendants reckon with it. Like, can we escape our heritage? Should we try to escape our heritage? I don't know. I like that movie a whole lot. I saw that movie like 3 times in the theater. And that one is definitely very violent. That movie is way more violent than Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
Really violent movie and great acting.
Excellent performances.
What's the actress's name? I can't remember anybody's names right now. She's Australian. She's like this incredible actress, but half the time you don't even realize what
Toni
she's been
Collette?
In. Toni Collette. Yeah. Toni Collette's a beast.
Yeah, she's an incredible
actress.
She's
a beast, and she's incredible in this movie. She does such a great job. And I think Alex Wolff from the Naked Brothers Band
Did a really good job as well.
Yeah, he does. And a few other actresses and actors who pop up in other places that you might recognize. The movie's awesome. And then this one I would say is controversial for understandable reasons. Actually, I didn't acknowledge this. For those of you who are not aware, the Rosemary's Baby itself is a controversial movie, not really because of the movie so much, but because of the person who directed it. The person who directed it has very rightfully fallen from grace for having committed some pretty heinous crimes in the late 70s and not really having been brought to justice properly for them. It's a whole thing. If you want to look it up yourself, you can. So if you object to watching the movie on those grounds, I ain't going to criticize you. I personally don't object to watching the movie, but if you do, understandable. Same thing with Silence of the Lambs, although Jonathan Demme, the director, has not been accused of anything. But it's more the a lot of trans people, even at the time that the movie came out, feel that the movie comes across as being very transphobic. So I will simply say that I saw it when I was a teenager, and the performances absolutely blew my mind. I think the subtext of the movie visually, I think, is really fascinating, because most of the horror in that movie comes from the fact that the movie puts you in the perspective of Jodie Foster's character, and there are all these scenes of her walking into rooms of all these men towering over her and staring directly into the camera. And so they force you to identify with being a woman trying to navigate male spaces and how men leer at women. And there's so many visual representations of just like how uncomfortable this situation is, and how all these dudes keep hitting on her and flirting with her. And as she's just trying to do her job.
And that's Anthony another Hopkins, one my mom made me watch when I was like 10.
Oh, man. That movie it gets pretty intense.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anthony Hopkins' career defining performance.
Yeah. Absolutely brilliant performance.
Yeah. He steals the movie, and he's in the movie for like 15 minutes. It's unreal. Yeah. So good as Hannibal Lecter. But if you don't want to watch a horror movie that involves, or a horror product that involves Hannibal Lecter, but you don't want to watch a movie that has been marred by associations with transphobia, you could go watch the show Hannibal.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, the show is also really great. Mads Mikkelsen does a very, very different performance than Hannibal Lecter, but still fantastic.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's sort of like prequel-ish to, I mean, it's about to Hannibal, or excuse me, to specifically Silence of the Lambs, but also just kind of in its own continuity and mixes and matches it like remixes the books, because there's like a section, they adapt Hannibal before they adapt Red Dragon, very artsy-fartsy, also very gay.
Yeah.
Very, especially as it goes on, it becomes increasingly gay.
Yeah.
By season three, it's just fully gay.
Yeah.
I think to the point. I think they. Yeah. It goes from being subtext to being text. It's just gay. Want to watch some gay horror, that's kind of like real artsy horror. It's not horror. The gay part is not the horror, but it's a horror show. Nowhere near as intense as them. I could tell you right now. there's like the horror from this comes less from seeing violence and more from seeing the aftermath. So I guess it would be body horror in that sense.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that happens to the victims, because it's mostly like a serial killer show of them like trying to track serial killers.
Yeah, and it's really like the art direction is exquisite.
Yeah, but some of the things like these serial killers do, like one of them is a lady. She like lobotomize people and then create beehives out of their bodies, like in their heads and stuff. Mm-hmm. There's one guy who uses people's vocal cords. He like treats their vocal cords to make them into human cellos.
Cellos, that's my favorite one. I love that one so much.
There's one where a dude is like capturing
people. The totem pole is great as well.
Yeah. There's also the one where they create a color wheel of humanity. Ooh. Like, they get humans of every single hue and create glue them together to create a color wheel. Yeah, that one's very rough. It's a very interesting, very,
The mushroom
very...
dude. The mushroom
Yeah, that one was rough. Yeah. That's
so good.
Really great show. It's a shame that it ended when it did, but it ends.
Yeah.
I will say it does not end in an unsatisfying way. They did a great job ending that show.
Yeah.
Hopefully it comes back someday. But anyway, those are my little side things that I spent more time on than I wanted to. Sorry about that. I've talked so much this episode.
It's all good.
This is my final pick. This actually made my list. This is The Witch. By Robert Eggers, released in 2015. I think I watched this movie 4 times in the theaters, and I've watched it several times since it was released. I adore this film. I would describe it as like a prequel to The Crucible.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
This family in colonial era America. I guess United States specifically, before, like, they, to the point so colonial that they literally came over on a boat. Like I don't think any of them were even born on American soil. They all have English accents still, all Northern. They got these Yorkshire accents. It's great.
So still largely puritanical, right?
Very. Very puritanical. They are excommunicated from their community for the father's sin of, I think, pride. They don't go into a lot of detail, but the movie opens with them being excommunicated. They leave and have to go live out in the woods by themselves, or near the woods, like right by the woods in this cabin. There's something up with the woods. Something bad in them woods. There's
I really want to see this.
Anya Taylor-Joy. This is the movie that put Anya Taylor-Joy on the map. She does a great job. I can't remember the names of the other performers, but the actress, the actress who plays her mother, plays Catelyn Stark's sister. What's her name? In Game of Thrones, Kat's younger sister. Who has like she is the weird son.
I am not up on Game of Thrones, so like you just saying Game of Thrones to me means absolutely nothing.
Anyway, she's Lysa Arryn, that's her name, Lysa.
Yeah.
Or Lysa Tully is her maiden name. I cannot remember the name of the actress. Oh, Kate Dickey. That's the name of the actress. Kate Dickey plays the mom. Another actor who's in Game of Thrones and other stuff. Great, big, deep voice. Awesome Yorkshire accent. He plays the dad. There's a lot of like subtext of like coming of age, but also the oppressiveness of that society in terms of sexuality and being a young woman in general, like femininity and all these different things. And it's not just about the young, it's mainly about Anya Taylor-Joy, but there's also a lot of stuff about her younger brother also coming of age. His puberty is not so great. Huge amounts of sexual subtext in this movie, and just text, honestly. And the dad is like constantly chopping wood. And so there's like this weird thing of like masculinity and trying to provide for the family, being the strong masculine figure. There's a big black goat who's terrifying. Black Philip. I love this movie. It's the most recent movie on my list. It's fantastic. I can't say enough good things about it. There's not a single part of it that does not work for me. My favorite line, I will say, is quite unintentionally comedic, in my opinion. There's a moment near the climax of the film where the dad yells out, "Did ye make some unholy bond with that goat?" And it's a preposterous thing to say, but delivered with such conviction. I love that movie so much. It's not a comedy. It's just, really that violent, but still kind of disturbing. A lot of people find it to be slow. It's definitely of like the new breed of like atmospheric horror movies. Mm. Very atmospheric horror movies, but not
Midsommar as well, right?
Yeah, but Midsommar actually, it's similar to Midsommar, but Midsommar actually has more, A little bit. Yeah, I would say more on-screen violence overall, but it's similar. I find The Witch scarier, actually, than Midsommar.
Okay.
But they're both in that same vein. And actually, Robert Eggers and Ari Aster are buds.
Yeah.
Ari Aster directed Hereditary and Midsommar. Robert Eggers directed The Witch and The Lighthouse, which isn't really a pure horror movie, or else I might have considered putting on this list, because The Lighthouse is also incredible. That movie's bonkers. Truly bonkers. I love that movie.
It's a solid, such a solid bunch of stuff if you want to pick through.
Yeah, this episode has gone on long enough. I hope, do you have any, I guess you haven't really done it, but if you want an example of including horror in a game that you can listen to in a way that is shocking to your players and horrifying to your players, but does not ruin the whole dang game, you can go listen to episode 4 of Outlaws and Obelisks. And granted, basically advice for including horror, and this is very thin because I can't spend a bunch of time on it. Talk to your players ahead of time, so do not spring something like this on them. Make sure you know what everybody's lines and veils are, or what things they are comfortable with you including, and what things they are not. And so do not include the things that they are not comfortable with. That's not how you get to horror. That's how you get to a game that needs to end. But if they are okay with things, then you work in that playground, and then... Yeah, you create situations where there's a fear, and fear usually comes from a certain sense of powerlessness. So while you certainly don't want to take away the party's agency, you want to create a threat that feels so credible that it's like, oh dang, I don't know if I can handle this. I don't know if I want to try and handle this. This thing is horrible. That's what you want to do. And there's also fear of the unknown. Well. Thank you. But that's what you want to try and do. A fear of, like, they don't know what it is necessarily, or even if they do know what it is, they know it's really, really bad, and they're not 100% sure they can get it, like, they could beat it. That's kind of what you want to, that would be my suggestion. But yeah, please, respect your players' boundaries.
Yes, of course, it's always important to respect boundaries.
Yeah. Anyway, do you have any last thoughts, Unati?
No, have a really spooky October, people.
Yeah. Yes.
Have a good time.
Yes, thank you. We hope you enjoyed this top five. I really enjoy every time we do a top five. They are never just top fives. But
never ever just top fives.
Hopefully you enjoyed this latest edition of a Halfling Top Five.
Yeah.
We'll catch you all later. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
Ha 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 ha